Hi, everyone, and welcome to Spill It, the Gwinnett County Public Library's podcast all about YA literature, where two of us love YA and one does not. I'm Catherine, Teen Services Librarian, and I love YA.
I'm Patty, Youth Services Manager, and I also love YA.
And I'm Sarah, Youth Services Specialist, and I don't like YA. Sorry.
Boo.
Boo.
So let's go around briefly and tell everyone what we're reading right now. I'm reading Perfect on Paper by Sophie Gonzalez. I'm about halfway through this one, and so far, so good. I'm really enjoying all the rapport between the characters, especially Darcy and Broham. This one's realistic fiction, but could also kind of be considered a romance. I have some predictions about where it's going, but it's too soon to tell if I'm right. The premise of this one is that Darcy's an expert at relationships and runs an anonymous relationship advice service out of an unassigned locker. But she gets busted by Broham when collecting letters from the locker in exchange for keeping her secret. Darcy begrudgingly agrees to become his dating coach with an end game of getting his ex back. What about you, Sarah?
I just finished a sci-fi book called Contagion, written by Aaron Bowman. And it's the first, not in a trilogy, but in a duology. So a little bit more acceptable. You're making a shorter term commitment if you decide to read this book. And it is about the protagonist, or the main protagonist, is a girl named Thea, who's a high school aged intern for another scientist, Dr. Lisbeth Tarlow, on an icy planet. And they suddenly, their little team gets called away because there's been a distress call from another planet, from a drill team there that needs some help and evacuation. And of course, when they get there, the team is dead and everything. They have to figure out what happened and how they can now survive the danger that they've now found themselves in. So it's space and sci-fi. And if you like space, maybe you like it. Catherine, there's not aliens, so maybe you'd like it, but there are zombies, so maybe you wouldn't.
No.
Space zombies. Do, do, do.
I like space, but I do not like zombies.
It's not too graphic in the zombie descriptions, but I liked it. There's not romance really in that one. It's low key, but I feel like they're setting up romance for the second book. And but there is adventure and high stakes and orphans, which I know you guys love.
You had me for a second because I was like, orphans?
I was like, wait.
When did I ever say I loved orphans?
Well, you love YA, love so you love orphans.
I get it. I get it now, but it took me a minute. I was like, what?
Yeah, I know. I was like, I don't get it. Why would I love orphans?
I'm not saying there's anything. Did you see my face? Because I was like,
wrong with orphans?
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. Orphans are cool.
All parental statuses are great. Whatever your parental status is, it's fine.
I just figured YA fans are particularly drawn to the orphan.
Now I've got the giggles. Okay.
It's very hard to have an adventure when you have a caring parent.
Good one, Sarah.
Even in this book, even the adults
are orphans.
Yes.
We broke Sarah.
It's just a thing. No parents allowed in these books. It's okay. I'm an orphan myself, so I can make those jokes. Anyway, yes. Contagion, I would recommend. I'm going to try to read the second one, which is called Immunity. So, Patty, what are you reading right now, and does it have orphans?
It does have orphans.
I knew it.
Technically, just one of them is an orphan. So I am reading A Torch Against the Night by Sba Tahir, and it is the second book in a series. I know. They're very good. It's a four-book series. I read the first one last year, and I'm finally getting around to reading the second book, which is not a knock on the first book being good and exciting and very action-packed. It's just, this is when I finally got around to it. These books are set in a sort of fantasy world that's very Middle Eastern inspired. There is martial soldiers, and it's ruled by an emperor. And in the first book, you meet the scholar girl that's our orphan because her parents are killed in front of her, Leah. And it's told from two two points of view, her point of view, and then Elias, who is the marshal. He's at the school for learning how to kill people. I can't remember the name of it right now. But that's basically what they do. They learn how to be masks, and they have these silver masks that they wear, and they go off, and they're like the emperor's shock troops and take care of all of the putting down of rebellion and all of that stuff. And he does not like it, and he's planning to run away in the first book. He wants to flee. And he gets talked into staying because he's told by these people who can kind of see the future that if he stays and wins this competition and competes in this competition to be the emperor, he will get his freedom in a way that he wants. And if he leaves, he will always be haunted by what he's done and the people he's killed, and he will be hunted by the other marshals. So he stays, and it's the story is how those two people end up in the same place and sort of working towards the same thing. And that first book ends on a big sort of cliffhanger. So the second book that I have really just started, I'm not super far into it. It's again told by their points of view, but they've added a third person in. Elias's best friend, Helen, and she is, well, I'm not going to tell what she is currently because that would be spoiling the first book. But she is a very interesting character, and I am very curious to see sort of where these three storylines are going. And because these have been out for a while, I have heard bits and pieces of like what happens to these characters. I don't know the full what happens, and I don't know how it happens to them. So I'm really looking forward to finding out how the little bits of information I do know come about. So what are we talking about today, Catherine?
Okay, so I'm so excited. We're finally talking about today's topic, which is the book I picked. If you were listening to our last episode, Ghostwood Song by Erica Waters. I've seen this one classified as both horror and paranormal fantasy. I'm kind of leaning into the paranormal fantasy camp, but I love both genres, so I'm good either way. But really what I think I would call this one is a Southern Gothic. But it also has a bit of mystery and has queer representation in it, too. Does anybody else have any thoughts on where you would classify this one?
Southern Gothic works really well. Yes, I would go with that.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, there are some spooky moments, but not strictly horror type moments, I would say.
That's what I was feeling, too. It wasn't like a scary story.
Right.
But I guess let's go into the cover talk, which I know is Patty's favorite because we all realize you can't actually see the cover that we're talking about, but it's kind of fun.
So shall I describe it?
Well, they can't see it.
Right. So yes, this book has a bunch of flowers around it, and they are being swarmed by bees, although when you read the book, I think they're supposed to be wasps. And then the title of the book is written in a font that resembles like vines or branches. And then there's a rattlesnake at the bottom. And the tagline is, "Some secrets aren't meant to stay buried."
So the notes I had written about this was basically that I loved the cover. It sells the creepy factor with the dark background, the words being illustrated to look like old or maybe burned wood, which kind of comes into the story later. Like you said, it's got the wasps on it. So, like, a lot of the elements from the cover kind of play into the story of the book, which makes sense. I like it when the cover actually makes sense for a book.
I don't know. I don't love this cover. I know you do, and I'm sorry. But it doesn't really say much to me that makes me want to read it. And I do feel like I'm not sure after reading it why the snake gets such a prominent role on the cover. I feel like maybe somebody read like the first third of this book and then drew the cover.
I mean, that's entirely possible. My only complaint with the cover is it's slightly hard to read the title. But I also say the cover, I took it to my book club and it was just sitting on the table, and the people in my book club were like, "Oh, that looks interesting. What is that?" So it sold interest in it.
All right, here's the synopsis for this book. Shady Grove inherited her father's ability to call ghosts from the grave with his fiddle. But she also knows the fiddle's tunes bring nothing but trouble and darkness. But when her brother is accused of murder, she can't let the dead keep their secrets. In order to clear his name, she's going to have to make those ghosts sing. So the things I loved about this book are kind of all the things that make it what I feel is a Southern Gothic. The old house, the ghosts, the haunted woods, the fiddle, her reclusive aunt. It all kind of goes into it. I love the bluegrass music and how it's incorporated into the story. I love Shady and how she got her name. She's named for her dad's favorite bluegrass song, I think. I love Cedar, Orlando, and Rose. Those are probably my favorite characters. I'm sure others probably have other opinions. And I also love the pace of the book and how you didn't know the whole story until the very end. Like, it wasn't predictable to me.
I thought a couple of things were predictable, but for the most part, it wasn't. And it was the unimportant stuff almost. Like, yeah, I was like, the murder that is the catalyst for setting off this whole story and sending Shady looking for this fiddle, it is important. But I felt like that was maybe the weakest link in the book. That I knew, like, I knew pretty much instantly who did it. But I did not know any of the rest. I did not figure out any of the rest of the stuff. I didn't expect any of the rest of the stuff. The stuff about her dad and that family trauma and all of that was unexpected.
I was kind of torn about the killer. I wasn't so sure who the killer was right off the bat. I mean, I had a feeling that person was definitely involved, especially in, like, the events leading up to the murder. But I don't want to spoil anything, so I'm not going to say who the murderer is.
Yeah, no.
But
I would agree, though, that when the murderer was revealed, it was not a big shock.
Right, right.
So
I will say, so what I particularly think about that makes it very kind of Southern Gothic is the fact that this book is at its heart about generational trauma, which I feel is like an underlying theme of a lot of Southern Gothic novels and literature.
It's true.
And every character in it, except for Rose, who we really don't know very much about because she's very much a side character that Shady is not friends with, so you don't know a lot about Rose. Every character has some sort of family trauma that is multi-generational.
Yeah, and I mean, I really wanted to know more about Rose. I mean, I said she was one of my favorite
characters. Oh, I love Rose.
But it's just because she's a spitfire. And, like, I don't know. It left me wanting to know a little more about her. This is a standalone, so Sarah should be very happy about that. There's no sequel, even though I would like to see maybe more from some of these characters.
But I like about Rose.
Rose is Cedar's twin, so, I mean.
Are they twins?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
So she probably has some of that same generational trauma.
Yes. And like
we just get a little more about Cedar's story.
I just like that Rose is, this is what we know about Rose at the beginning of the book and what we know about Rose at the end of the book. She is small. She curses like a sailor and she's just a little ball of anger. And I love her. She's great. Sarah, it's a standalone book.
Yes.
Yes. There are some family issues,
but there are parents present.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is an orphan.
Well, yeah, but the main plot point driving this book forward is the fact that her dad's dead, that Shady's yes. dad is dead. So I would still count it as at least a half orphan.
All right, so how did you feel about this book?
I didn't love it. Sorry, Catherine. I didn't hate it. I do feel like it was slower at the beginning and harder for me to get into. And then by the end, like the plot revelations kept coming faster and faster. So there was a lot packed in at the end as opposed to the beginning. So maybe there's like a little imbalance there, but it's okay. And I do appreciate the supernatural element. I felt like the mystery element was a little predictable, but not so predictable that it was that I figured everything out. Certainly, there were still questions that remained right up until the last few pages. I know that Catherine likes Cedar. I found that Cedar was a little too perfect. I don't think that as a character he had any rough edges. Like, his biggest fault was that he ate meat and participated in rodeo, which, for Shady, was a fault. I don't know if it is for a lot of other people. And one thing that bugged me about it, but this is true, it's not a fault of the author or the book. It's true of all kind of horror stories or, you know, stories like this, is when the characters will say to each other, well, don't do this, whatever you do. Like, whatever you do, don't go in the basement. And I feel like in real life there'd be an explanation. Don't go in the basement because there's a ghost down there who's gonna, you know,
eat you.
Right. Or the person that they're talking to would be, what do you mean? What do you mean? Why should I go in the basement?
I did get a little frustrated with the aunt and, well, all the grown-ups really, because the grown-ups knew things that were important and no one would communicate with anybody else, which and again is a symptom of trauma because they don't want to talk about their trauma.
Dealing with their own grief and trauma.
Yeah, and her brother too. It's also, you know, it's doesn't build tension in the story to have you, you know, this is what you shouldn't do and these are all the reasons why, and then that character will probably be like, oh yeah, you're right, I shouldn't do that, and that's the end of the book. So I understand, like, in, you know, it's a plot device and it has to be done that way. But it's still, when you read it, I'm like, but ask them why. Like, her brother's like, whatever you do, don't go after that fiddle. Just promise me you won't. She's like, okay.
Well, they're trying to protect her.
I know.
And they know she's going to make the decision that they don't want her to do, even with the information. But I know, but it pushes her to find the information anyway. So, I mean, I see both sides of it.
And don't you think, though, that in real life, if somebody told you, Catherine, whatever you do, don't whatever, you would say, but why?
Me personally, I would say okay and then go and do it anyway, just like Shady did.
Just like Shady did.
And maybe that's why I related to Shady so much.
I also felt like maybe I missed something, but at one point she's like, well, I've got to go after this fiddle because I've tried everything else to, you know, get to the bottom of this crime.
She has tried nothing.
And I'm like, you literally tried nothing. I don't know what you're talking about that you've tried everything
else. She's not Nancy Drew.
Like, clearly you want the fiddle. I get it, but don't say you've tried everything.
She did try talking to...
She asked a couple people, do you think so-and-so did it, and got their answer. That's not investigation.
But she went and talked to her suspect, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I guess.
I can't remember if
that conversation came before or after
she
started.
It's like you walk in, you're like, hey, did you kill so-and-so? Like, they're going to say yes.
Oh, you caught me.
You're right, little 15-year-old child.
I think I really liked Cedar, though, because he's what Shady needed. And I don't know, the writer or the author wrote Shady in a way that I really felt invested in her and I really kind of cared about her. Cedar was kind of what she needed. She needed that, like, not rough-edged person. She needed just that caring, stable person, because even her, I mean, parental issues, her mother was not good for her.
No.
Like, did not have Shady's...
And I think Cedar is set up very much as a foil against Sarah, because that is the romance. The triangle is between Cedar and Sarah, and Shady likes both of them. And I like the fact that the author makes it very clear that it's never a debate between a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Like, that is not the issue. It's their personalities and what they offer and what they bring to the relationship.
And what she needs out of a relationship.
And what she needs out of a relationship.
And it was, I would say, that the romance was one of those things that I didn't find all that predictable. Like, I, you know, for a good portion of the book, was still not sure which person Shady would find herself ultimately drawn to. So,
what I liked,
it wasn't insta-love.
No, it was not insta-love. No,
you're
right.
I thought you might like that, too.
I do like that.
I was going to say, what I like about it is that even Shady admits... several times, oh my God, why am I worried about my relationships? My brother is in jail. I appreciated that because if she had not brought it up, I would have noticed it. I would have been like, girl, you have bigger fish to fry. That more, you need to worry about your brother, not your love life.
I do feel like the characters, with maybe, like I said, the exception of Cedar, who I feel like is a little too perfect in the way he's presented, but I do feel like they were realistic depictions of young people in a way that I haven't necessarily found in other books that we've read for this podcast.
Yeah, I do too.
And that, you know, their fights were kind of the way that young people fight, and their feelings were hurt the way young people's feelings are hurt. And I found that very true to life.
I, of course, like the found family aspect of this, about how they end up forming this band and they all sort of come together. And I really enjoyed that part of this book as well.
So yeah, the music, I did every time that there was a new song mentioned, I went and found it and listened to it, because some of these references she kind of explains and some of them she just drops in there like, and then we played this song. And so I kind of wanted to, I'm not a super bluegrass fan. I've heard some, But it was nice to familiarize myself with that a little bit so I could kind of immerse myself in their world a little bit and understand the story more.
And I didn't realize how much of bluegrass music is like murder ballads.
I didn't either.
But I loved it. And it, I mean, it is perfect for this story.
Yes. It's super fun because a few years ago, my roommate got really into murder ballads. One of those things, she went down a Wikipedia rabbit hole, and the next thing you know, she's got like 12 murder ballads downloaded on her phone and is looking for more. And she would tell me the plots of them, and the plots of them are always completely ridiculous and over the top and super sad. And she would sit here and she'd be like, it's murder ballad time. Let me tell you about this one.
If you listen to the soundtrack to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, you'll get kind of a vibe. A lot of the songs that are on that soundtrack are mentioned in this book.
And I really wish, I think my biggest complaint about this book is that it doesn't have a playlist in the back. Because I would love to know which versions Erica Waters was listening to or was thinking of as she wrote the book. Because some of these songs, they're traditional ballads and traditional bluegrass, and they're recorded by so many people, and they sound different depending on who recorded them. But I love a book that comes with its own soundtrack.
I know we talked briefly about the mystery elements in the book. I mean, the obvious one was the murder mystery, but I also liked like the family history mystery because we briefly talked about that before. Like Shady doesn't know anything about her family history, really, just little bits and pieces she's heard. And that kind of plays a big role in the story too. Again, I don't want to spoil it, but like all of that kind of unravels and develops throughout the book. But then like the end is where things really start picking up and you learn all this stuff and you're like, whoa.
Right. And like some of it you sort of see coming. Like, you know, okay, there must
like
have
parts
been
of it. Yeah.
That little girl has to tie in somewhere sort of thing. But like, I did not expect some of the revelations. Like I didn't expect where the fiddle came from.
Right. Exactly.
Where does the fiddle come from? You'll have to read the book. The other thing is I convinced my book club to read this book as well because I thought it was really cool. And we met last night actually to talk about this book. A whole group of people really actually very much enjoyed this book.
So I guess now let's talk about read-alikes. So if you read this one and you like it, here are some other books you might like. And actually, when I was doing some research for this one of the things I read was that some see this as a Sawkill Girls by Claire Legrand meets A Beautiful Creatures by Cami Garcia and Margaret Stoll. I don't really see that at all. I've read all of those books.
Is The Beautiful Creatures because it's Southern?
Only in the, Beautiful Creatures could be seen as Southern Gothic-ish, I guess. They're both kind of gothic-y. I don't remember Sawkill Girls being Southern, but those are not the books I would actually recommend as read-alikes.
What would you recommend?
Well, the first is House of Salt and Sorrows, which we kind of talked about in two episodes ago when we talked about Small Favors. House of Salt and Sorrows is definitely gothic. It's a loose 12 Dancing Princesses retelling. There's a manor by a sea where 12 sisters are cursed. The sisters are dying one by one, and the remaining sisters sneak out each night to attend magical balls and dances. One of the sisters, Anna Lee, is being visited by ghostly versions of her sisters. She's trying to figure out the mystery behind the dances and the reason behind the deaths of her sisters, and she needs to do it quick before she's next. The next one I would recommend, I have two, is This Is Not a Ghost Story by Andrea Portes. And this one's more of a regular horror story, but has ghosts, it has a haunted gothic type house, and despite the title, is actually pretty ghosty. And this one, Daffodil Franklin takes a summer job to help pay for her freshman year at college, house-sitting an old mansion for a wealthy couple. But as time goes on, she comes to realize the house is more than it appears and that it definitely does not want her there. There are weird noises, things appearing and disappearing, what feels like eyes watching her, and some pretty creepy neighbors. All right, what about you, Patty?
So I also have two books I would recommend, and I went in a slightly similar vein. The first one is The Name of the Star by Maureen Johnson. It's a Shades of London. It's the first book in that series. These books are about a girl named Rory Devereaux, who is from Louisiana. She leaves Louisiana and ends up at this boarding school in London. And while she is there, she can see ghosts, it turns out, and she gets involved with a ghost that is copycatting the Jack the Ripper killings. And it's about that, basically. It's a mystery. It's got ghosts. It's very similar. it is funnier than Ghostwood Song. Maureen Johnson is a very humorous writer, and humor just infuses that whole story. It's very good. The second book I am recommending is The Raven Boys by Maggie Stiefvater. It is set in rural Virginia, so it's got that southern feeling. There are ghosts, again. The story of Blue and her family, they are fortune tellers. And they see everyone who's going to die in the coming year, is how it starts. So it starts off kind of spooky and gothically. There's a lot of magic. There is a forest that all of the magic comes from. There's dreams that are very important in this book. There's found family, because it's Blue, and the four boys from the academy school nearby, the private school. And it's a story. So Blue has always been told that the boy she kisses will die. So she's just decided she's never going to fall in love. She's never going to kiss anybody. No one's ever going to die. Except she meets Gansey and Adam and Ronan and Noah and starts to fall in love. So it has ghosts and romance and found family. And it's got some of that. It's not bluegrass murder ballads, but it's still got that sort of sense. Because Gansey, one of the boys, is on the search for this Welsh king named Glendower, who is believed to be buried in Virginia. And it ties in with kind of the Welsh legends, which I also associate with Appalachia. And it just sort of ties in with the bluegrass Appalachia thing.
All right. Well, I've got one that reminded me sort of another I read called Hold Back the Tide by Melinda Salisbury. And because it is also supernatural, it's also about solving a murder mystery. And this one's set in Scotland, so it's kind of got that gothic feel to it as well. And it's set in the past sometime. And in it, Alva Douglas lives with her father, who everybody in the village believes killed her mother. And Alva's not really sure that if they're right or wrong about that. And then supernatural things start to happen. There's also a little bit of a love triangle, kind of the same as with Ghostwood Song, where there's you're not sure which person Alva's going to choose, if she chooses any of them. And so, yeah, it reminded me somewhat of that, some of the similar aspects to the story.
I also highly recommend that book.
Yeah, that one, again, there's some things that happen, and as it unfolds, that were very surprising. You know, usually I think I can predict what's going to happen in these books, and that one was not one of those.
It wasn't predictable to me either at all. Okay, so I think now we're ready to assign the next title, and this time it's Patty's turn. And given that the next episode will post on Valentine's Day, I'm going to guess it's romance. So what do you have in store for us to read, Patty?
Well, I thought about picking a book that had absolutely no romance in it at all for those of us who aren't super big into Valentine's Day. But I decided to go with a romance, kind of. I chose Once Upon a Broken Heart by Stephanie Garber. This book is a first in a series, which I didn't realize when I...
What?
I know. I'm actually very disappointed because I'm like, I really enjoyed it and I really want the next book. But it's a very good story. It feels very fairy tale-like to me, which I really, really enjoy. I'll give you a brief synopsis. This is the story of Evangeline Fox. She finds out that the man that she loves is going to marry someone else, her stepsister, in fact. And she makes a deal with the Prince of Hearts to stop the wedding, and things do not go as planned.
I'm intrigued. Sounds like something I would like.
I don't know if Sarah's going to like it. This has been another episode of Spill Lit by the Gwinnett County Public Library. I'm Patty.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Sarah.
And we want you to join us next time when we spill the tea on Once Upon a Broken Heart. Remember to like, review, and subscribe. And until next time, keep reading.